You're listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. Work in Progress explores the rapidly changing workplace through conversations with innovators, educators, and decision-makers, people with solutions to today's workforce challenges.
COVID-19 has affected seemingly every profession, not the least of which has been the nation's education system. Educators have had to move quickly to adapt to virtual teaching, some with little time to prepare. We want to explore that today in this episode of Work in Progress. Joining me is Revita Bowers. She's the retired head at the Center for Early Education in West Hollywood, California, and a leading expert in independent school education. Revita, thank you very much for joining me.
It's my pleasure.
You know, I'm going to put the hard question to you right up front. What have we learned by this experience? What have we learned about how the education system was functioning before COVID-19?
I think we learned that there was a lot of technology in schools. There was a lot of expertise on the part of many of the personnel in schools. But the shift very rapidly to going to online education was something that challenged not only schools, but the homes in which we found our students. They weren't as prepared to move to distance learning, nor, because of the diversity of the kinds of families in school, did they have the same level of connectivity and access to technology across the board.
Let's break that down. There was a lot to talk about in that statement. What was going on in most school systems? There's a diverse range of how prepared they were. What kind of grade would you give them on that?
Well, you know what? I'd give them an A for effort, because I think every school has embraced technology to the greatest extent possible, and to the greatest extent that technology was developmentally appropriate for the students they were serving. But I think one of the things we quickly realized is that the technology wasn't as available on the other side for all of our students, nor was the connectivity. Given the broad, diverse spectrum of students in all kinds of systems and across all kinds of systems, we knew that socioeconomically, as well as because of where those students were located, they weren't all going to have equal access to the programs that schools were trying to push out in their distance learning platforms.
That really shows the lack of broadband around the country, particularly in rural areas. There was not that connectivity, but also in the homes, right. Not everybody has access to those screens.
Yes, and part of that is socioeconomic. There are a lot of families who may have a cell phone, but may not have broadband access in their homes. And without that kind of connectivity, I think we found ourselves with kids who not only didn't have the appropriate equipment in their homes, but they also didn't have connectivity to be able to use the equipment that they did have.
Do you think that this is going to mean that we're going to just stick with in-class learning, online learning? How do you think this is going to shake out and needs to shake out in the future? How do we fix that problem?
Well, you know, I'm also on the board of an organization called Common Sense Media. And one of the first things they did, because they work with schools all over the country, and they work with all different kinds of schools all over the country, they went to the big companies like Verizon and others and negotiated free connectivity for many of the students. But I think that connectivity is going to need to come from the federal government. It's going to have to come with grants that come from the federal government so that we have uniform access for students. Because I have to tell you, I think it's going to be a while before students in any of our environments are going to be able to get back on their campuses full time.
Yeah, I also was reading recently, I think it was a New York Times article that said not all the students, and it may not even be because of connectivity, but not all the students were actually logging into the programming for the online learning.
Right.
I think that's a challenge when you try to put it into the hands of parents who might be working themselves and make it difficult to get the kids to sign in.
Right. Because if it's a choice between being able to sign in to your work as a parent and having your child online at the same time to accomplish work that they're doing for their schools, guess what the choice is going to be? It's going to be with the wage earner. The other thing that we're finding is the more flexibility there is around the hours when kids can do the work, that's going to be extraordinarily important too. To have that flexibility of time when they can get on devices, when others in the home may need those devices more.
That's a great point. You know, a lot of people have multiple devices in their home, but not everyone does. So that doesn't level the playing field.
No, doesn't at all.
How do you think the teachers themselves have been prepared? Do you think they're prepared to handle this, make this switch? And what do they need to do moving forward?
Well, first, let me say, I think the nation's teachers have done an extraordinary job under very difficult circumstances moving into their homes. That wasn't the way any of them were trained to teach. Very few people, except in online teaching environments, have had the kinds of professional development training to be able to morph to that as quickly as they had to. It was a rapid transition for them going into their homes and then delivering content. And many of them were having to do that content-driven work and producing both the curricula and also the online teaching while they were taking care of their own families in their homes. So they were doubly challenged, many of the nation's teachers. But I have to say, I admire the work they've done and their ability to really ramp up and do it. The second issue becomes both the skill with which it needs to be done if it's going to be long-term. And it looks like it's going to be longer-term than any of us could have imagined.
Do you believe that there's going to be a need for more technology taught in the school? I mean, we've all grown up, I would say probably a lot of the teachers have grown up with cell phones and computers of some sort. But I think there's probably a particular skill needed to teach that remotely.
Right. You know, it's not just enough to connect. It's to be able to translate the content of your pedagogy and your curriculum in ways that will be most easily understood. And remember, when we're talking about children in this country, we're talking about students that are preschool through 12 in the pre-collegiate spectrum, and then our nation's universities needing to make this connection also. So I think it's going to take a different level of instruction at the university level as we prepare our teaching faculty. And I think a different level of professional development training for the preschool through 12 environment as well.
For a lot of people, the school serves multiple functions. It allows them to go to work, a lot of adults. It allows them to leave their children somewhere safe to learn and allows them to go to work. It's also, for the children, it's a socializing tool. Tell me a little bit your thoughts on that if we end up sticking with online remote distance learning.
Well, distance learning has distanced them not only from their schools, but from the social connection of schools. School communities provide different kinds of nurturance for kids. The relationship between the teacher and the child, the understanding of the teacher of the spectrum of learners in their environment, and the different kinds of learning tools and curriculum they're going to need to be successful. That warm, empathic relationship that teachers have with many of the students in the system. So we're challenged because those relationships, as hard as teachers are trying, and as much as children need them, aren't going to be that wonderful friend's hand on their shoulder when they're challenged, or looking into the eyes of a child or a student who's frustrated and being able to really read what's in their facial expression. So we're challenged in lots of ways. And kids are also missing the social community of the school and the culture that the school represents in their lives. Schools are formed around the needs of its students. And so to be missing that very palpable culture is something that can't be fully replicated in a distance learning situation.
I also think there's a social safety net aspect of that, which is for some kids, school, the hot lunch that they get, is the only substantive meal that they get during the day, or the breakfast.
And I think, you know, schools have worked very hard to provide that food for those people who need it. And to date, they've been pretty successful. But remember that our schooling reaches children in very remote locations as well. And if they can't reach out to those locations in every instance, then we know that the food insecurity that's a part of our population, and it's growing with this pandemic, we know that that food insecurity need is not going to be as well met right now as it is when kids can walk into a school and get a hot meal.
I've read that some of the schools have at least opened up the facilities so people could come by and pick up meals, which I think is very admirable.
It is. And, you know, many of the libraries, which is where many of these children were going after school to use their wireless and their desktop computers to get their homework done before they went home, those have been closed. But I understand that even in some neighborhoods, the libraries have left on their wireless so that students can go to the parking lots and still have access. But even that's not possible for many students. So I think school districts and school systems, all kinds of schools, are making really good faith efforts to get the material into the hands of kids, to get the connectivity through people that have very generously donated it. But we're still lobbying for funds from the federal government to be able to provide the connectivity in the ways that it needs to be provided across the nation.
You know, before COVID-19, if we could look at where we were in the education system, you were the head for more than 40 years at an independent school. Right. Talk a little bit about how you tried to prepare kids for choosing a career, give them the skills that they needed to enter the work world after 12th grade or after college, depending on what they chose.
Well, remember that we were a preschool through sixth grade with about 540 children. But part of the mission of the school was to prepare children for the world outside the school, to not become siloed from understanding that the skills that we need to give children in order to enter a workforce at some time in their lives begins with their first school experience. And we took that very seriously. We wanted them to become articulate. We wanted them to be able to express themselves, even at very early ages, and to understand that adults would be listening as they attempted to express themselves. We wanted them to understand that literacy, child literacy as well as adult literacy, was going to be essential in them moving into the workplace. And then we wanted them to also have the kind of grit, the kind of resilience, the kind of work ethics that would prove really valuable. And one of the safest places for them to practice all of that was in school environments. We also wanted them to understand that there was no shame in failure, that failure is one of the ways we learn. And if you can learn to accept that if you fail at something, there are wonderful and extraordinary opportunities to learn and then to take what you've learned from that failure and apply it more successfully the next time, aren't those the same kinds of skills that we want in our workforce? And we also wanted them to understand that technology and technological skill and media literacy in particular and digital citizenship, when you're in that media literacy, were also going to be critical skills as you move through the K through 12 environment and then go into college and afterward into the workforce, or as you leave the high school environment and go into the workforce.
Ravita, what will schools need to be thinking about before they can reopen?
Primary for all schools is going to be the issue of safety. I think that's going to be critically important. How are we going to open in ways that we can rest assured? And I think schools are wrestling right now with the global issues of a cure for COVID-19. But then they're going to have to think about programmatically what is going to need to change on their campuses. And I think as schools start to think of that, many of them are setting opening dates, but announcing that first they're probably going to be opening and reopening in a distance learning environment again. That they're going to start the school year whenever they're able to start it, and whenever they're going to be able to start a start date or announce a start date in a distance learning environment. And then I think schools are going to be thinking very carefully about how can we continue to get the professional development and the support of systems that we're going to need to do this even better than we did it when we had to close so abruptly and move to distance learning this spring.
You mentioned that you felt that the government has a role in stepping in to help as we move into the future, into this new post-COVID-19 education world. What advice do you have for administrators and educators and teachers? What would you say to them about what they need to be thinking about?
Well, I think in the K through 12 spectrum, when you think about digital citizenship, when you think about media literacy, there are skills that we need to impart to this generation of students that are in schools that are going to be part of the lifelong learning that we want kids to embrace very early on and practice during their entire lifetime. So I think we need to understand carefully that when smartphones were developed, we put a very powerful piece of technology into the hands of people all over the world. And with that powerful technology come extraordinary responsibilities. And so our learning institutions need to partner with families and need to partner with other educators around the country and, in fact, around the world, because we are teaching global citizens. They need to understand how they behave in social environments online and how they behave in learning environments online. And they also need to understand that everything they go online to learn about is not true and not factual. So that media literacy becomes critical in them beginning to understand when they're on a place or when they're in a space where they can rely on the information to be historically factual and currently factual.
Ravita, your humanity and your love of educating children always shine through. I always enjoy talking to you. So thank you very much for joining us.
Absolutely. It's been my pleasure.
My guest today has been Ravita Bowers. Thank you for joining us on Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, the editor-in-chief of Working Nation. My producer is Larry Buell. Our executive producers are Melissa Panzer and Joan Lynch. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.